Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in studio, Stephen Weasel Hurley. Whatever. Weasel Weasel!
Yeah, boy!
That's right, Stephen Weasel Hurley, just like I said, right there doing his thing. He's aboard. Chris is coming to us live from the Sumter County Fire facility there. I mean, that's this is official and stuff. You're all like fighting fires and things and oh my gosh, I hope that's not a call. Sorry, that's me hitting the wrong button. My bad, guys. But so actually, do you guys have a bell? Is that how that works over there?
Yeah, they call it tones.
They call them tones. But I mean, let's be honest. Is it electronic or is there an actual like metal device that gets hit by a clapper?
No, it does not.
Oh, that is so lame. Okay, well, at least you weren't the one that jumped out of their chair when they had the bell go. I did. I'm just saying. Anyways, despite that fun, we have to take a serious note here for a second to shout out and give condolences to Stuart Scott and his family. He recently passed away to cancer. Survived two other times over 9 years, but this latest instance was more than he could handle, unfortunately. But the way he put it is, it wasn't whether or not you stayed alive while you had cancer, is what you did while you had cancer, regardless of whatever the outcome may have been. And I think that's probably the single most moving statement. I've had people in my life affected by cancer. I think all three of us had here on the show. And I think that outlook is, we can't really grasp how that's really the right attitude to have and how Stuart Scott, in my opinion, got it right doing that. Among analysts, sportscasters, whatever you want to call them, I feel like he's one of the guys that got it right, you know, regardless of all the jokes we make about, you know, the four-letter networks and things like that. He's someone that did pretty well, and this is a sad thing to see happen. Would have rather see him, you know, play out his years and entertain us all. But unfortunately, other things were in the cards. So condolences for his passing to his family, friends, and, of course, his fans as well, too. I know a lot of people on the NGSC sports staff were affected by it emotionally as well. And it's a sad story all the way around. But what we will do here is try to do the best job we can for guys like him that, you know, try to pave the way for those of us who like to perform with pizzazz and energy. I don't know. That's just my takeaway from it here. And I have the advantage of hosting a show, so I can say stuff like that and give my thoughts on it. So with that aside, let's go ahead and get into the show. This weekend, we did have playoffs. But in order to get to the playoffs, the season has to end. And if the season ends, you have to offer up your end of season awards. I feel like I should have like some sort of glitzy, glamorous music for that, but that'll work. But I did not. I have a baby. I don't have time to come up with fancy music for things anymore like that. So let's go ahead and do it. Through our superlatives, the end of season awards. Who is the best at what, doing what, in our opinion? And of course, it's the our opinion concept too. Not everybody will agree with us, mostly because we're smarter than a lot of people that do this, but I digress. Anyways, let's go ahead and start. I'll do it from the bottom of Chris's list to the top, meaning best coach of the year. Weasel, let me throw it to you first. Who you got?
Got to go with Bruce Arians, the Cardinals head coach. Led to the Cardinals to the playoffs, despite them being the Cardinals. And I had some, you know, good feelings about this team, you know, because Carson Palmer was there and the team was really clicking. Defense was playing tough. Mm-hmm. And even though they lost them, I think it was around like a little bit more than halfway into the season, they still excelled and they did make it to the playoffs. So, yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, that's worthwhile. And I would have done this anyway, but I would go ahead, raise your hands, guys. Anybody else got anybody else? No. No, you don't. I mean, can we have a discussion a minute? Okay. John Abraham, Carlos Dansby, Darnell Dockett, Darryl Washington, all Pro Bowl caliber defensive players that he went into the season with to start this season. Okay? It was absolute stupid to be at this much of a disadvantage. Yet, he still found a way. And now, Weasley, you talk about Palmer going down. That's only the tip of iceberg. First of all, Palmer went down. Then he got Stanton. Stanton went down. Logan Thomas went in to replace him. Then Carson Palmer happened to get well just in time to come back. Carson Palmer goes back down. Drew Stanton comes back in. Drew Stanton gets hurt again. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, here we have Ryan Lindley, a guy who didn't throw his first NFL touchdown until week 17 of this year. And they still won at least one football game with him. I mean, that is pretty ridiculous as far as however, I will give an honorable mention to Jim Caldwell of Detroit. I know I didn't have him doing well in Detroit. A lot of people didn't have him doing well in Detroit. A lot of people were all, oh, he's too soft-spoken. He'll never do well. Well, the Lions made the damn playoffs, and I know I'm pretty certain none of us predicted that on September 1st. So definitely points for him on that. So we all are of one mind on that. I think this is one where we might have some difference of opinion because there was some very, there wasn't anybody on this year that really grabbed you as the comeback slash most improved player of the year this year. But we had, let me just take it to you first. Who you got?
Gonna stick to being Homer right here. Big Ben. It's the guy had 4,952 yards. The big part was 32 touchdowns and only 9 INTs, and he wasn't sacked as much, and he did have a 103.3 quarterback rating for the year. So, and even with losing Le'Veon Bell, he's still Le'Veon Bell.
When you want to run the football, Le'Veon.
Yeah. So there was the emergence of him, and when Antonio Brown got drafted, I was like, he's just going to be, you know, one of those. I was thinking, like, you know, Antoine Randall or he's going to be like a supportive player and all, but
or three receiver. You never thought he would spawn to what this this Pro Bowl figure that he has become.
Yeah, so. Good old Big Ben.
You know, I'm not going to say that's a bad choice. What prevented me from doing that was he did have two games in a row with six touchdowns where he absolutely spanked the Colts and the Ravens back to back. So that's a bit of an outlier that may have pulled his numbers up, but he also lost to the Jets and Bucks at home.
I think Raiders too.
I don't know that that was at home.
Raiders.
But the point is, really. I'm coming to you with some moving stuff today. The point is, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but Chris, who you got for most improved?
Let me get back in there real quick. Sorry.
Oh, shoot. I thought, I'll go ahead. Give me a minute. I'll go with mine. I got DeMarco Murray, a dude who normally has trouble staying on the field. And I'm fairly certain. I was thinking about him as a candidate for Offensive Player of the Year. He was my midseason Offensive Player of the Year. And you could argue, oh, but Cal, that offensive line got so much better. Maybe they did. But DeMarco Murray had the best improvement therein. And something else I noticed, he actually stayed pretty healthy throughout this year. Did get hurt later in the season, but still had an impact to be instrumental in the Cardinals, or excuse me, the Cowboys' shocking rise back to power to what eventually would be a very uplift, well, a surprising season for everybody and all. Oop, maybe I used the wrong word there. But Chris, who you got?
I got Rob Gronkowski.
Gronk.
Because he was injured last year. You know, the comeback player, I made it as a comeback instead of most improved. He was injured last year. Basically, the last 2 years, he hasn't really done anything because of his injuries. He had two surgeries in the off season, and he still put up the numbers and helped the Patriots land the number one seed in the AFC.
I would say this. He came back in the season so late, that's what took me off of it. That's still a pretty decent pick. And I would argue this, is if he keeps up that same production next year, he might be a candidate for me in 2015, depending how things go. See, I got to make sure I say 15 now because that whole New Year thing. Happy New Year, by the way, everybody. Yeah. So, okay. So that'll do it for comeback. Next up, biggest disappointment. Who out there made you just go, wah, wah? I'll go ahead and start just so I can get my in-laws pissed at me. The New Orleans Saints had no reason to be bad this year, other than the fact that their defense is potentially tremendously horrible. Okay, I get it. And you lost Darren Sproles. Okay, well, maybe you missed him more than you think. But to come out and not even win a division whose winner had a losing freaking record. Okay, no. I'm not saying put Sean Payton on the hot seat. I'm not saying that we should look at a replacement for Drew Brees if you're a Saints fan. No, nothing that dramatic. But this was a sorry, sad, and sappy season. I think at this point the Saints get a free one, but they better get right next year, especially in a division that's weak. Oh, yeah. By the way, Steve Smith isn't even in the division anymore. You have arguably the best receiving option in the entire division in Jimmy Graham, paired with Marquise Colston, and you still couldn't get the job done. Yeah, that's trash or Rooney. I don't know. Weasel, who you got?
I got Robert Griffin III, Redskins quarterback.
Ooh,
at least Redskins quarterback for now.
Ah.
So he had like 4 touchdowns, 6 INTs, sacked 33 times, benched, and
benched,
yeah. And his future with the team is uncertain. It's like the Redskins, and I believe at the time it was Shanahan was the head coach at that, and they gave up a crap load to grab him at the number 2 spot in that draft.
Right.
And for him to maybe not even be in the Redskins in like next year or the year after, yeah, that's pretty disappointing. So,
remember that how we had that discussion about how we have that Motel 6 campaign with Captain Obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that yet?
I haven't seen that.
Okay,
but I know what you're saying.
Get on it because you should really audition if they need another guy because you're nailing it with that statement, Chris. Biggest disappointment you have is
Jay Cutler signs the big contract during the year, and then he gets benched one game for favor of Jimmy Clausen. I mean, how low can you get with that? How Jay Cutler his season he has with all those weapons on offense with Matt Forte, Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffery, Martellus Bennett.
Yeah.
List goes on and on and on. Yeah, they didn't have the defense either, but it all came down to Jay Cutler. You can't get the ball in your playmaker's hands. So, and then he signs that contract, during the season, and just his play gets worse. So, I'd say Jay Cutler is my biggest disappointment.
Yeah, and actually, based on that, I'm surprised you didn't say the whole effing Bears team. But then you throw in that Clausen thing, and I'm like, you know what? He's got a point. Because Jimmy Clausen is the one Carolina Panthers starter in the 2000 era, barring injury, of course, where Steve Smith didn't get 1,000 yards as a receiver. It's pretty sad. It's pretty sad. I don't know. Well, let's go ahead and bring things back. Go ahead.
No, obviously, yeah, that was the Jimmy Clausen and Matt Moore era there that year.
There you go.
Carolina.
Throwing down that history. If you keep going, you'll probably throw out Rodney Pete. And Peter Winkie, right? How about those Seminoles?
Winkie, Chris Winkie, yes.
Anyways. Right, so with that, we'll jump to a biggest surprise and lift up the tone here a little bit. Weasel, who you got?
I got a pretty simple one. It was the Cardinals at 11-5. It's teams like the Cardinals. It's like you don't really expect them to be anything. And they really got it together, and so I never expected that. I don't know where I had the prediction at for them, but I don't think it's good to make the playoffs. So
yeah, and especially with all that they accomplished, it's a worthy pick. Let me go with Chris next. Actually, who you got?
Okay, real quick with Weasel, he had the Cardinals at 9-7. So, I mean, he wasn't too far off, 2 games off, not a big deal. But for me, with the biggest surprise I had was Tony Romo.
Yeah.
I mean, I mentioned last week with him, you know, he had in the month of December, he had 70% completion percentage, 12 touchdowns to 1 INT in the month of December. Well, you know, you go back for the whole season, he had 70% completion percentage for the whole year. And then also he didn't falter like he normally sells from December, and he led his team to the playoffs and win the NFC East first time since like 2006.
I'll say this for you, brother. You're very close, in my opinion, on that. You have Tony Romo. Why don't you have the whole Cowboys squad? That's my question, okay? We had, back in September, we had a guest help us do the NFC East. You guys remember? Big TJ, Torian Johnson, on the show of Go Podcast. And he said that the Eagles had all but owned that division and that the Cowboys were the least of his worries. And we all kind of agreed with him at the time. Let's not lie. That defense was among the third worst in history. History in 2013, right? Anybody else remember that? I do. Okay. And you know, then the O-line comes to life with some of these draft picks. Then the running game gets picked up. And on top of all that, the team performs in December. Like Chris said, that I can't leave that alone. That's such a fantastic point.
There's no DeMarcus Ware, too.
Yeah, without missing. Yeah, the third worst defense, and they lost DeMarcus Ware. That's an excellent point, Weasel. Good throw in. What is it, soccer? Good throw in? Well, I don't know. Anyways, but the point is this. I might just be talking about soccer, but when it comes to American football, the biggest surprise to me with the Cowboys. I mean, Tony Romo is obviously a part of that, but I think you can't limit it just to that team. Yeah, and we'll get more into their performance over the weekend later part of the show. But for now, Defensive Rookie of the Year. Weasel, who you got?
I actually got Chris Borland, 49ers inside linebacker. Hmm. And he didn't play much, the first four games. His stats weren't really there. But the thing is a guy named Patrick Willis.
Patrick Willis.
He got injured. He was put on the IR.
And I totally didn't know that. Just kidding.
Mm-hmm. And the thing was is that he came in 107 tackles, 84 solo, 7 passes defended, 2 INTs, and 1 fumble recovery.
Yeah.
So it really, when you're trading in one of the all-pro linebackers of the game, one of the best out there, for a rookie, the guy, you know, stepped in, and he did his job. So,
you know, and I like that you didn't just go by stats on that selection. You know, when you factor in, you have to fill the shoes of Patrick frickin' Willis. Sure, the Niners may have gone 500 this year, but it wasn't because of that guy. No, Borland did a great job, and that's a good pick. I didn't go that way personally, but I can't front on. That's a fantastic pick. Chris, who you got?
I'm going with my mid-season defensive rookie of the year, which was C.J. Mosley, inside linebacker for the Ravens. He had 133 tackles, 3 sacks, 2 INTs, a forced fumble, fumble recovery, and 10 pass defended. He's more of a cover linebacker there with, you know, Terrell Suggs, you know, usually rushing the quarterback and everything, and C.J. Mosley usually has the speed to cover receivers. And so that's who I went with there for the defensive rookie of the year.
And it's not to say he didn't have some sacks, too. I mean, I like that you have more linebackers.
Three sacks, right.
Right. And I too went with C.J. Mosley, by the way, but I liked that he's playing in a division that has other competition within the division. Now you could argue, and if I were Weasel, I would. You could argue that the NFC South may have bolstered his numbers some. That's true, but that also means he has to cover Jimmy Graham. That also means he has to cover Greg Olsen. Those are challenges. Even though they're a big fish in a little pond known as the Cardassian sisters of the NFL, the NFC South, I think that says a lot about what this guy could become. And C.J. Mosley's my guy too. I'm just saying, but yeah, Michael Borland's a good pick too, Weasel. Not fronting.
The one stat that stood out was the 10 pass defended. I mean, that was more than any other rookie defensive player, even corners and everything like that. 10 pass defended.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that's what stood out with me. I mean, the other people had other players that, you know, they thought were better and everything like that. But, I mean, I went with C.J. Mosley. I mean, some people would say the Rams defensive tackle. But, I mean, his stats don't show it. I mean.
And he didn't come on until late in the year, record. I felt like.
So.
Yeah, and I forget the guy's name, but I know the guy you're talking about. I didn't feel like he came on until later in the year. C.J. Mosley was a threat. He didn't make my midseason awards, but I considered him, and for consistency alone, he deserves some touch. I think that's why I gave it to Mosley over Borland today. But if I was evaluating it tomorrow, you know, depending on the mood I am, I could have just picked Michael Borland, or maybe I'm going against Borland because I'll be judged as a homer. I don't know. Maybe it's that. But I mean, excellent linebacker play from these rookies. You know, I think fairness would dictate a 1 and a 1A, but both these guys had Pro Bowl worthy performances. I don't think they both made the Pro Bowl. I know Mosley did, but yeah, solid work all the way around. Leading us to Offensive Rookie of the Year. First of all, before I ask Chris who his is, Weasel, have you ever considered working as a recruiter for a living?
No.
Okay, here's why you should. Chris, who's your Offensive Rookie of the Year? Oh, I think we lost Chris. Damn it, that was going to be funny. Well, anyways, Weasel, we'll go to yours first. Maybe he'll be back in time. Weasel, who you got?
I'll pick someone who played just 12 out of the 16 games this season. We got Odell Beckham Jr., Giants wide receiver.
Oh, snap!
He led all wide receivers with 91 receptions, 1,305 yards, 14.3 average, 12 touchdowns. And he had the catch of, people are not calling the catch of the year. Some people are calling the best catch ever.
Let's not go that crazy.
I'm not saying it is, but all I'm saying is
it's in the conversation.
He has that with him. And a cool thing was that when he was getting started as a rookie and he played against Seattle, there's a guy, Richard Sherman.
Oh, him.
He gave him major props. So that's some good words from one of the top in the game. So
okay, so I'm going to try to do this bit again now that we got Chris back. So you know why you should be considering a recruiter as your profession there, Weasel? Chris, who's your choice for Rookie of the Year on offense?
I got Odell Beckham as well.
Boom. When we first posed the question, Chris said no.
Booyah.
I originally did say no, and then I went back and looked at the stats, and then the last three games that he had, one of those games he had over 200 yards receiving.
Yeah.
21 targets in last week. I mean, he's most of the Giants' offense, at least receiving. I mean, he's more than 70% of Eli's targets. But, I mean, 10th most in receiving yards among all receivers, and he missed the four games. If you take his average out, he'd be at over 1,700 yards for the season. So I would rank him third among receivers if he had played the first four games.
Wow. There you
go. As a rookie.
And not starting every game at that. That's
correct.
Lunacy. So, I mean, that's a heck of a pick from that going. I mean, because it's awesome. I have that too. I mean, if we were all in studio, we'd be like, okay, hands. Who's got someone else? Good, we don't. Moving on. Which takes us to Defensive Player of the Year. Weasel.
I got kind of the obvious choice. It's J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt.
Texans defensive end.
Hey, what's that in my closet? Why, it's a J.J. Watt jersey. All right.
20.5 sacks. He was, I believe, 22 was the...
22.5.
22.5 was the record, but the guy that had 22, Kansas City.
Justin Houston.
Justin Houston. I was thinking about, you know, possibly picking him, but besides the sacks, I think J.J. Watt did a little bit more. He's got... He's got one safety, 11 passes defended, defensive end.
Right.
He's got one INT, two touchdowns total for the defense. He had an interception return for 80 yards for a touchdown, and from a fumble, he had one. Four forced fumbles, and five of which he did recover. So
five of which he recovered.
And it was for offense. It was three touchdowns, right? Yeah, three touchdowns there and there?
Correct.
So five touchdowns for a defensive end. Not bad. And those weren't easy passes, too. One of them was over his shoulder.
Yeah,
and
can we address this real quick? And I'm glad you brought that up, Weasel, because I know this is the Defensive Player of the Year category, but this needs to be said because I've heard people say, oh, those catches aren't that impressive to me because he was a tight end at Central Michigan. All right. First of all, here's why that makes my brain hurt. And no, it's not just because it was Chris Rizzo, the secret agent of sports, that said it, our good friend and former student of the game panelist. Okay, this is the guy who said that the freaking Grand Canyon in Arizona is just a hole in the ground and it's not special. All right, this is why it's impressive, even though J.J. Watt used to play tight end in college, because Mike Vrabel, Warren Sapp, or any of the other defensive crossovers who have done this in recent history could have made the catches he made to get those touchdowns. Okay, it's just that simple. All right, there you go. Thank you, Weasel. That was a good good setup there. I wanted to get that off my chest. Chris, who you got?
I too have J.J. Watt. And everything what Weasel said, I mean, why you couldn't go really anyone else with defensive player of the year. Yeah, you can look at Houston because of his sacks. He had 22. You know, the record was 22 and a half. But look at the games. Was it they? Houston was 3-13 last year. Is that the record? 2-14.
They were pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah, and then this year they're just like one game outside of the playoffs. So I mean, big difference, and it was all because of J.J. Watt.
I'd like to mention something about that.
No, just kidding. Go ahead, Weasel.
So they had a pretty bad record last year, and they believe they had the number one overall pick.
Yes,
and. You have people talking about how Jadeveon Clowney is going to be matched up opposite to J.J. Watt.
Correct.
And pretty much, you know, injuries and such prevented Clowney from playing. But if you look at the Texans from, you know, this year to next year, if Clowney could get healthy, then that could be a top defense in the NFL pretty easily. So
I've said it before, okay? When it comes to horror movies, no longer will it be Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees. It will be J.J. Watt. And Jadeveon Clowney.
So
Nightmares on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, all the dark and evil stuff that makes I should totally do like a horror commercial for that. I'll get my wife to practice screaming or something. Wait, this is sounding wrong. Let's move. Okay, moving away from this topic, my defensive player of the year is Justin Houston. That's right, I said it. Why? Gentlemen, you said it yourselves, 22 sacks on the year. And I'm not prone to give players a player more than one award. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I wonder where he's going with that. Offensive player of the year, Weasel Weez. Who you got?
I got. I picked because a lot of it was due to
J.J. Watt?
Yesterday's game. No.
It can't be due to yesterday's game. It's a regular season award.
More touchdowns than all of the Chiefs' wide receivers.
Oh.
So
J.J. Watt?
J.J. Watt? So I actually have Le'Veon Bell because I was really thinking of picking DeMarco Murray, but the thing is I picked the diverse thing, the overall good game that has Le'Veon Bell, because he had 1,361 yards rushing, 4.7 average. Now DeMarco Murray, he also averaged 4.7 per carry, but he also ran 100 more times than Le'Veon. He had 8 rushing touchdowns, and I think Murray had like 12. And he had 83 receptions for 854 yards, 3 receiving touchdowns. And a pretty cool thing as a running back who touches the ball about 300 times or so, no fumbles. Period.
Yeah.
Nothing.
That's a good stat there, too. I think I like that one more than the other ones you dropped. So, Weasel, remember earlier we were talking about that commercial with Motel 6 and all that? Here's a great opportunity that you should watch The Simpsons, so you might see that commercial. And I know you watch The Simpsons because I know you know what a homer is, because that's your second Steeler on the frickin' list.
Pretty much.
Chris, who you got?
Yeah, I got DeMarco Murray. I mean, 1,845 yards, 13 touchdowns. I thought it was Le'Veon Bell, but, I mean, when Weasel was saying the stats, it's just the reason why DeMarco Murray is above Le'Veon Bell, more rushing yards and all that. DeMarco Murray started from day one. Le'Veon Bell, it took him until week 5 or 6 until the Steelers figured out that they have a running back. So he missed a few of those games. Yes, he was the MVP of the Steelers, I believe, and they missed him over the weekend with the injury.
Certainly.
But, you know, DeMarco Murray did not get injured this year. He had started off the season with, 7-8 straight 100-yard games. You know, he has the record for the most all-time, starting, you know, with over 100 yards rushing in games. Beat Emma Smith's record. So as a Cowboys, so I got.
Yeah, anything where you can evoke I beat Emmitt Smith, and you're a Cowboy, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. I can't front on that. I didn't pick that, but I can't front on that. I went with Andrew Luck, and here's why. Granted, okay, fine. He may not have the highest stats of all, although I think he leads among quarterbacks with touchdown passes, but I digress. What I'm trying to say is this. I know this isn't an MVP award, but he's making so much happen with T.Y. Hilton and ? And don't give me Reggie Wayne, okay? This dude can't get open because defensive backs have figured out all you got to do is to step on his bandages, and then he like winds around because he's a mummy because he's so freaking old, okay? I don't want to hear about that. Joking aside, you know, some of the – granted, it's a regular season award, and this didn't go into my consideration, but I think the concept that he threw at least two touchdowns in the playoff game this past weekend while falling down, falling forward, avoiding the rush is just Andrew Luck's just awesome, period. I got nothing else.
They had the number one. They had the number one passing offense in the league this year. By the way,
there you go. And he's the commander of it. Boom. What do you want? Thank you, Chris. Which takes us down right before the break here to the. Actually, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. And now our MVPs after the break. So, yeah, everyone's so mad at me now. And this is a song of me expressing how much power I have here in the next 30 seconds. We'll be back shortly here on NGSC Sports. This is a student of the game.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man.
And now, we're back, and we're giving away our MVP awards. Weasel Weeze, who you got?
Well, about that thing and about not picking the same player for two awards, whatever. I got J.J. Watt, Texans defensive end, because he did work on both sides of the football. The guy, I mean, you always hear his name during the game. He, you know, makes a lot of plays, and that Texans team wouldn't be as good. If they didn't have him, that defense would be a lot crapper.
So, crappier?
Yes.
A lot crapper, as in they would be more like a crapper. Toilet. Yes.
So,
crapper praise.
But yeah, a defensive player, J.J. Watt.
Wow. Okay, there you go. Weasel breaking the rules. Guess what? I'm not going to get that mad at you. Here's why. Chris, who you got?
He's that good. He's that good. He needs to have two awards. That's J.J. Watt.
Hey, dudes, y'all know who I picked already.
he signed that. He was the defensive player of the year. I mean, yeah, granted, yeah, Justin Houston. Yeah, I know why you put Justin Houston over there, because J.J. Watt's going to be your MVP. So you didn't want to have two awards. But J.J. Watt was defensive player of the year. He signs that over $100 million contract at 11 o'clock at night, and yes. He's at the facility at 5 a.m.
Yes.
Just bringing it better. He was supposed to be helping out Clowney this year, and so his stats shouldn't be that well, because it should be he should be getting double teamed. Clowney should be getting open or whatever. No, Clowney, he's getting double teamed, triple teamed, and he's still getting sacks, getting forced fumbles, getting interceptions, getting passes defended. So that is why he has to have a defense player of the year and the MVP, because he was the Houston, basically the Houston team in general.
Yeah. It made an impact on both sides of the ball. There are so few players that can actually do that way. I mean, when's the last time you ever said, that would have been awesome, but Andrew Luck missed his opportunity to get the sack? Didn't happen. I think the one thing J.J. Watt didn't get to do was throw the football this year, okay? And my point on why I picked J.J. Watt is very simple, folks. And I might have said this before, but damn it, I'm going to say it again. Jay Cutler signed a contract. Everybody went crazy. There was hullabaloo surrounding Jimmy Graham's contract and about him changing positions and a whole lot of negotiation and all sorts of crap throughout the news. Chris said it best. 11 o'clock at night, this dude signs a $100 million contract, and how many people said word one negative about it? Nobody. Zip, zero, nil, nada, niente, niet, nine, none. I think I got 10 on that. Anyways, the point is this. That is not, no one was going to question him getting a big contract. Gerald McCoy, Ndamukong Suh, J.J. Watt, no one says a word. I'm just saying. But you better bet J.J. Watt's going to be holding the standard for Ndamukong Suh's negotiation. But that is a topic for a future episode in the offseason. We're still in the playoffs. Let's talk about the playoffs. That's right. The injured versus the losers in the playoff world. The losers who are hosting this game. The Arizona Cardinals and the Carolina Panthers. Chris, bring us in.
In an NFC wildcard game, it was a battle of defenses as both forced three turnovers each, but it was the Panthers' defense that excelled as they only gave up 78 yards of total offense as they moved on to the divisional round with a 27-16 win over the Arizona Cardinals. Neither QB was impressive, and both turned the ball over twice. Ryan Lindley, 16-28, 82 yards of offense with a touchdown, two INTs. So he did finally get his second career touchdown pass there. Cam Newton was 18 for 32. That's only 56%. 198 yards, two touchdowns, one INT, one lost fumble. And he had 35 rushing yards, which was the second leading rusher on the day. The Panthers did get D'Angelo Williams back from injury, the running back, but it was Jonathan Stewart who the Cards couldn't stop. He had 24 carries, 123 yards with a touchdown. Fozzie Whitaker had a 39-yard touchdown catch.
Waka waka.
Turning point in the game was right after that Fozzie Whitaker touchdown grab. It was the third quarter. Ted Ginn Jr. fumbled the ensuing kickoff inside his own 10, and a few plays later, the Panthers scored a touchdown to go up 27-14. So really the difference in the game, total yards, 78 yards for the Cardinals, 386 for the Panthers. First downs, 8 for Arizona and 25 for the Panthers.
Oh, my God.
Time of possession. Yeah. Let me say that again. First downs, 8 for Arizona to 25 for the Panthers.
That should bother you, Weasel. You should be mentally damaged. Wait, that's why you didn't say anything. You're traumatized.
Oh, that's it right there.
But time of possession, 23 minutes for Arizona, 37 minutes for Carolina. That's all I got on that game, because other than besides the defense, there's really nothing else going on there.
Yeah, there are more minutes. No, there are the Cardinals' differential in first downs to the Panthers was greater than the number of minutes divided in the time of possession. That's just a random stat I pulled out of my butt right there. But I'll say this. It's a heck of a stat that the 78 total yards makes for the lowest produced in a playoff game by an NFL team. Congratulations, Cardinals. The Hall of Shame is all yours. Look, I don't think any of us had... I wrote about it best in the Matchup Mania that I put out last week on NGSESports.com. And it basically said... I basically took the model that the Seattle Seahawks had with the New Orleans Saints when they won their game at 7-9, hosting the game as a losing record team. Now, Weasel, walk through this with me real quick. Seattle Seahawks, how did they beat the Saints in their playoff game? Short version.
I'd say all defense, of course, but
I would say Marshawn Lynch. Wouldn't you say Marshawn Lynch?
I'd say Lynch Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, Chris would say Marshawn Lynch.
He ran over 12 guys on one play. I don't know how that's possible, but he did.
Remember the one guy came back for more. Yes, sir, Ray, had another. Bam! All about that action. No, but
man, that was fun. That was fun, Daddy. Can I do that again?
Oh, boy. Maybe he knocked over the ball boy. Who knows? But what I'm trying to say is this. Now, why was Marshawn Lynch that effective? Okay, yeah, great. He's beast mode. Let's not take that away from him. But if you guys remember, that year the Saints were pretty low on their defensive front based on injury. They attacked the weakness. So, too, did the Carolina Panthers. Now, I'm not all that impressed. I mean, first of all, let's be real. Cam Newton did score half their points with that pick six. And the safety that the Cardinals managed was one taken intentionally by the Panthers, so I'm not talking about that here. But despite the lowest performance in playoff history, and the worst offensive production in yards in playoff history, the Panthers didn't really overwhelm this football team. Granted, there's a lot of cool stats there, but that scoreboard, not as wide as it should be for my comfort. But we'll get more into that, what that means in the next round of playoffs later on. This takes us to the second game of the week. The Baltimore Ravens visited the Pittsburgh Steelers. Weasel, bring it in.
The Ravens on the road defeated the Steelers 30-17. Ravens Joe Flacco threw for 259 yards and two touchdowns. Well,
259. Okay.
259.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. While Big Ben had 334 yards, one touchdown, two INTs. Now, the Steelers, they didn't miss their star, Le'Veon Bell. He was out due to the hyperextended knee injury. So, on the ground, the Steelers had only 14 carries for 44 yards. And they did use Ben Tate. He played previously, of course, for the Texans. Earlier this year, he played for the Vikings. And then he got to rush in a playoff game. But he wasn't that effective. You got the Ravens with Steve Smith.
Senior. Right.
Senior.
That.
And the guy had five receptions for 101 yards. It's pretty interesting if he gets the – it's a long shot to meet the Panthers in the Super Bowl. That interaction would be funny.
Doesn't that sound like a movie title? Meet the Panthers.
You got Torrey Smith and rookie tight end Crockett Gilmore. They each had receiving touchdowns. You have Antonio Brown for the Steelers. I believe he was number two overall in receiving yards.
Very good.
Nine receptions for 117 yards. And you had a touchdown by Martavius Bryant.
I like that touchdown a lot, too. That was a fun play to watch.
So when the Ravens were up 20-9, this was about 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter, Justin Forsett lost a fumble.
No!
And
I mentioned Homer there?
Yeah.
This is for you.
Tie-in. So the Steelers got the ball at their own 45-yard line. So next play was a 44-yard bomb to Antonio Brown. They did challenge it, and he was stopped at the 1-yard line. Shortly after, Martavius Bryant, wide receiver for the Steelers, had a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And that put the score to 20-15. And so you got 11 minutes remaining. And you're down 20-15, and they go for two. This was just one of those times where it's like, why? because the way I look at it is that, hey, if you're 20-15, you fail, and then you miss your two-point conversion, if they get a field goal, they're down by eight. It's like, then you would have to go for two again. So it's got me kind of mad, but whatever. But with 2 minutes remaining, they're down 30-15. The Steelers did have a blocked field goal that was went into the back of the end zone for a safety, but a late fumble by Steelers tight end Heath Miller pretty much ended the game for them. And
not to mention another red zone interception from Big Ben at one point in the game, too, did not help matters late in the contest.
Yeah, so Ravens moving on. I think they'll be all right. They'll be all right. We'll see how
they'll be all right. All right, you know. And actually, I mean, look, let's say the obvious thing. Le'Veon Bell, that was important, right? I mean, I felt like him missing not only something else we didn't talk about last week that we probably shouldn't have, but, you know, we probably should have but didn't, was the return of Haloti Ngata from his 4-game suspension.
Mm-hmm.
That.
His name was coming up a lot in the game, too.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, we brought it up. I brought it up last week. You know, that's why I picked the Ravens, because of one, Le'Veon Bell was going to play, and two, Haloti Ngata was coming back.
Good reasoning.
And Haloti gave up Ngata. Boom! Yeah, Weasel approves. I see him nodding.
Yeah, not bad.
It was from the hip, son. I'm surprised I haven't used that already. I'll check the tape. No, I won't. No, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right, Chris. And like I said, we should have brought it up more. You may have. But it was only really in the, study hall that we did. And, you know, maybe I was too busy trying to stop myself and failing to stop myself from picking the Bengals. Whatever. The point is this. I mean, you're right. Haloti Ngata even had a sack, I believe. Weasel's correct that they were saying his name a lot. And as far as defensive tackles go, that don't happen very much. Yeah, I'm with you, Chris, on that as well. But yeah, let's jump over to the next game. I think that pretty much wraps that up. The Bengals travel to Indianapolis to face off against the Colts. Weasel.
The Colts at home defeated the Bengals 26-10.
Yeah, yeah.
Bengals quarterback Andy Dalton threw for 155 yards and he lost a fumble. Now, the thing about that guy is that they did not have AJ Green for that game.
Correct.
They
were missing. Let's be clear. They weren't just missing AJ Green. Okay, they were missing Hawkins, I believe is his name, the next guy up. They were also missing Dane Sausenbacher. I love that name, Sausenbacher, by the way. Sausenbacher. He sounds like he's going to go into an Aaron Rodgers commercial and go to pump you up. Okay? He needs to practice in the mirror like I do. They would not tell him that voice is terrible. I don't think. I don't know. Anyway, stop nodding, Weasel. It's radio, not TV.
I'm listening.
You're just enjoying the show, right? Chris is like, I want to talk. You need to stop, Kyle. Anyways.
But you're missing. There's another receiver here you're missing. That was out earlier in the year. That's Marvin Lewis as well.
Correct. There you go. So going down the list, Burkhart, I believe, is the guy's name that ended up. Whatever.
Correct.
Who's seen Major League here? Who are these beep guys? Okay. the reason I picked the Bengals was Colts injuries. I had no idea the Bengals were this bad off. And apparently neither did a lot of people. Anyways, Weasel.
Yeah, but the reason he was out was, you know, the concussion protocol or whatever they call it. And pretty much you have one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. He's up there, top five at least. And,
yes, at least. He's a Pro Bowler, so he's guaranteed to be top six,
so
allegedly.
So it was,
top five in the AFC, correct.
And considering for the way concussions work and all that, is that if you come back too soon, you can get hurt. You can get damaged a lot more. So to let a guy like him sit out there at the Bengals staff and stuff,
they're
doing something right at least now.
They didn't let him sit out. They made him sit out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
to not let him play is probably the way you mean to say that, definitely. And I'm following you on that. And that's a good point. It shows a step in the right direction. Weasel.
Yep. So you have Mohamed Sanu was supposed to be the guy that, you know, maybe would make up some of that yardage, but yeah, it was three receptions for 31 yards. Rookie running back Jeremy Hill, the guy has promise for next year, 47 yards rushing and a touchdown. So good old Andrew Luck threw for 376 yards and a touchdown. Running back Dan Heron had 56 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
Wide receiver T.Y. Hilton.
Can we stop with Heron for a minute? Can we stop calling this guy Boom Heron? This is not an impressive running back, and I don't know why he has a nickname, okay? I'm just saying. Andrew Luck throwing a pass, falling down, awesome. This guy getting a nickname, garbage. Next question.
So T.Y. Hilton, big player on that offense, six catches for 103 yards, and rookie Dante Moncrief had 54 yards and a touchdown. So pretty much not this game, Bengals weren't really in it. And it's a good win for the Colts.
Yeah, and you know, the things I cited were that the Colts were really injured. Well, the Bengals ended up losing both Dre Kirkpatrick and Ray Maaluga before this game was done, making them more injured. And then up front, both sides of the line were dominated by the Colts. If I'm using that phrase, you as an offensive or defensive line have problems. Okay, the Colts should not be dominating anybody up front anywhere. That's trash. And that's why the Bengals lost this football game. The defense underperformed. Luck did his job. That fumble he had, not his fault. It's the difference between having a guard that pulls over to stop the linebacker, like the Ravens did when they on a crucial touchdown by the Ravens, where James Harrison was in there. The guard pulls off, see, he doesn't have anyone to block, hits him, takes him out of the play. Flacco goes, finds, I believe it was Torrey Smith in the back of the end zone. Okay? This guard? Nah, just let the guy run through and smash the red rifle to pieces. Okay? It's little things like that that made the difference in this game. The Bengals' defensive line was just abysmal, getting pushed around up front. that they did not run the ball like they should have been able to. Just a bad outing all the way around for the Bengals, and I don't think it's their fault. However, Hugh Jackson, the offensive coordinator, has shown me his weakness here. And a lot of people want... Let me ask you guys this. Marvin Lewis is getting a lot of blame, even though he's taken this team to five, I think maybe six, playoff runs. It's the Bengals. Without him, they're not doing that. Have you not seen what happened? Do we have to go to the history films to show that the Bengals did deserve the name the Bungles at one point, right? But now people want to fire Marvin Lewis. I think that's dumb. Where are you guys at?
Well, look at this real quick. I'm just going to say this point. With Marvin Lewis, he lost his offensive coordinator and his defense coordinator to head coaching jobs this year, and he still wins the AFC North. That's all I'm saying.
Legitimate point, Chris. Well played. Weasel, where do you come out?
Well, I kind of agree with Chris on that.
There you go. So Marvin Lewis should not be fired. And here's the other truth. If they fire him, I'll give you the over-under 3.5 days before he has a new job. I'm taking the under.
I'll take an under.
Head coach?
Yeah, or I'll say anywhere, but head coach, fine. Maybe you want to raise it to 4.5 then, you know. Anyways,
there's so many teams that need a coach. He'll have a job by the time they'll say, "Oh, you're fired." By the time they say he's fired, his phone will be ringing off the hook.
Actually,
you know, and he'll be in Atlanta. He'll be in freaking New York. He'll be in.
Gus Marone just recently, you know, opted out of his contract, thinking he knows better. I bet they upgrade Marvin Lewis in an instant. And yes, folks, that is an upgrade. I love it, Chris. You couldn't be more correct. So, anyways, that and we were talking about trying to get Gus Marone mentioned. I think we pulled that off. Boom. Oh, good times. So, with that, Chris, the last game on the docket, the Lions and the Cowboys. Take us through.
The Lions came to play on Sunday in the first half, but forgot that there was a second half to the game, and the Dallas Cowboys came back from a 17-7 halftime deficit to win 24-20 with a little help from the refs, which we'll get on later, and they move on to the divisional round and take on the Green Bay Packers next week. The Lions started off scoring touchdowns on both of their first two possessions. The first score, Stafford found Golden Tate across the middle, and he would take it 51 yards for the touchdown.
Yeah.
Golden Tate had six receptions, 89 yards with a touchdown. The very next series, the Lions drove the field, and Reggie Bush juked his way to an 18-yard touchdown run.
Yeah, I actually thoroughly appreciated that as an art form. I mean, it sucks that Reggie Bush didn't get used proper until he was old, but yeah, there you go.
All right, so, yeah. The Cowboys would get on the board right before the half as Terrence Williams took a pass across the middle and raced for a 76-yard touchdown. He would later have the game winner on an 8-yard touchdown grab in the fourth quarter. DeMarco Murray, you know, had 19 carries, 75 yards of a touchdown. Tony Romo, 19 for 31, 293 yards with two touchdowns, no turnovers. He was sacked six times.
Six times. Two of them. By the way,
two of those times was by Dominican Sue on one series.
So a guy who shouldn't have even been on the field. We've gone over this. Well, actually, we went over it last week about a suspension. We weren't able to report to you that it was reduced to a $76,000 fine. Why? I don't know. Yeah, I'm not happy about that.
Yeah. So you find the guy and then it was seen as that the reason why they overturned it. The arbitrator, whoever did that, was that he, for 2 years, I think he's been clean of like those fines or something like that.
Let's reword that a little bit, Weasel. You're not wrong here, but it's not that the arbiter opted to do this. The rule that's been put in place by the new policy that was enacted this year surrounding all the Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson stuff states that if a player goes 32 games without a violation of this ilk.
Clean slate.
Clean slate. And this includes, by the way, post and preseason games. So it's not even two full years. But this policy is something that arbiter Ted Cottrell had to go by. So before you can start with, and I had to do this on the air with Josh Zimmer last Tuesday. I was guest hosting for the NGSC Weekly. You can think Goodell needs to be fired all you want, but this isn't his fault. The fans got what they wanted here, and now Sue got to play in this game. Granted, the Cowboys still won. Granted, that kind of makes me smile. Not because I'm a Cowboys fan, but more because I hate on dirty players. That's right, I said it. Yeah, that's where I'm at. Chris.
Matt Stafford's 28 for 42, 323 yards with a touchdown. The 9 NT lost fumbles. The very first play of the second half, it was when his interception occurred. Defensive tackle just lifted up his hand, batted the ball up in the middle. All the offensive linemen were standing around like, oh, there's a ball up in there as a linebacker caught it. Inside the Lions territory, Lions defense showed up. They settled. Dallas had to settle for a field goal, and right when Dan Bailey comes out, the announcers gave him the all-time jinx. He is the most accurate kicker in the NFL, and he shanks it right.
Damn it!
Right when they said that, he goes, he's the most accurate kicker. Right when the ball snapped, I go, he missed it. Sure enough, he missed it. Calvin Johnson had 5 catches for 85 yards. Jason Witten had 5 for 63. 21 of the 63 yards came on a 4th and 6 that led to the Terrence Williams touchdown. All of Jason Witten's 5 catches came on either a 3rd down or a 4th down. He was an outlet over there to Tony Romo. But right after that touchdown that put the Cowboys up 24-20, the Lions are driving down the field, and on a 3rd and 1, there was a pass interference on linebacker for the Cowboys on Pettigrew, the tight end for the Lions.
Brandon Pettigrew.
And the refs just picked up the flag and said that there was no pass interference.
So let's walk through this real quick. Now, Weasel, you saw the play.
Mm-hmm.
I did too.
I've checked the replays where they do show different angles. Which do matter.
Okay. Your take.
My take. All right, so this was just, part of the game, 8:23 left, and you got rookie linebacker Anthony Hitchens.
Right.
The guy's 6 foot, 235. He was going up against Lions tight end Brandon Pettigrew, 6'5", 275. Now, for me, I saw the pass, and I was like, he kind of underthrew it, but the one thing I did notice that before when the pass happened, Brandon Pettigrew, his hand is on the face mask of Hitchens. He was like kind of pulling him back, and then when he brought his arm back in, he would try to make the catch, and he couldn't. So I think what the refs were saying was that it's that you can face guard in the NFL. You can't do it in college, though. You'll get a penalty. But one of them just must have said that there wasn't enough to make it a pass interference call. But
let me clarify something. And unless they've changed this, I don't think they have. But unless they change this, face guarding is not legal in the NFL. Hasn't been for some time. And the statement that's been released is it was face guarding, but not pass interference. No, this isn't one where you can have one without the other. This is the confusion. Now, you're right about Pettigrew and the contact. That was all before I think the ball went up. The way that worked out for me. But the fact that the linebacker doesn't even make a play on the football, to me, I thought it was the correct call.
I thought it was a bad pass, too, but that's just me.
It being a bad pass does not forgive
pass
interference, let's be clear. I mean, we've been over that a bad pass doesn't necessarily forgive intentional grounding, though that's a different discussion, right? And then, on top of that, the refs didn't just pick up the flag and he comes out later. No. They had all but spotted the ball, practically, and then picked up the flag. There was a significant delay after this.
That's pretty bad.
I agree. And we could go back and forth on the call. I mean, pass interference in general is a judgment call. Granted, it's a judgment that the officials often get wrong. But the fact that they didn't stick to the call, I think, is the biggest problem of all.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Chris, continue.
Yeah, that's all I had on the game. Just really the difference was the three turnovers to the Lions to one for the Cowboys. But going back to that with that interception and everything, yeah, I mean, the guy that the head official is the one that threw it, and then he's the one that said, you know, he's the one that called pass interference. So it's someone that was down the field saying, oh, no, it wasn't. You know, it's one of those things that you already called it. How do you one person say it's pass interference and the other one doesn't? That's why I also said with a lot of these pass interference, I said before, you know, you got to instant replay. Instant replay is there so you can have the call. That should be the official going there. Well, I say this, I say that. You're in there. You can't decide it. You go look at a replay. No one's going to get mad at you to go over and look at a replay to see you make sure you get the call correct.
I don't know if that's something they could do in the rules, but an official requesting a replay is a very interesting concept that I like a lot. I don't think I've never heard that before. This could be a new thing. Let's put this on Twitter, kids.
That's the way it should be. I mean, the officials go, I say it this way, I see it that way. Instead of arguing, say, okay, you're right this time. Next time it's me. We're going with my call. That's basically what it is. Okay, I'll take your word this time.
Yeah, and,
next time you're getting mine. You know, if what I say it is, it is. You know, it's like we're doing rock, paper, scissors on there. You're not saying it, you know. We're probably doing that. Okay, I'm taking a number. Pick, you know, even or odd. And I pick odds. Okay, you're right. Okay, we're
hey, if I get this call, I'll totally pay
your
house.
You know what they're saying in the puddle. I mean, as long as they say one of us says yes, one of us says no, we're going to do a replay to view it.
I mean,
that's simple. And just take an extra 2 minutes to look at it, make sure you get the call right, especially in a playoff game. Maybe they should enter for the playoffs so you don't have the rest deciding the outcomes of this game.
Another nuance I enjoy. If you don't like it overall, induce it in for the playoffs. Also very interesting concept. This is very interesting. I have to intentionally stall because my mind is slightly blown tonight, Chris Rankin. Well done. But
and then also I heard a parody on the way here on the radio this morning. You know, the officials come up with a press conference, say, yeah, we usually have to talk because we're officials. We don't have really much to say, but you know, we're partying back there with Jerry, and you know, the fourth quarter's a little rough. We had to pick it up just like our flags, and
good God,
yeah, that's it. So. You guys don't like it, that's it.
The famous party bus defense, which, by the way, as far as Jerry Jones partying and all that, I still don't get how both, quote-unquote, New York teams play in New Jersey, yet Chris Christie's in the Cowboys box. Hello, constituency fail. I'm just saying. But something I want to add on, like a lot of people are like saying, oh my God, this play totally ruined the game and lost it for the Lions. Yackety schmackety. Look, let's be clear about a couple things. First off, I'm not saying Lions fans shouldn't feel screwed about this call because the whole picking up the flag and it being late was pure trash. We've established that. However, you mentioned Terrence Williams' first touchdown on the day, Chris. That happened after what was a pretty garbage offensive pass interference call. The defender initiates the contact within 5 yards. The offensive player gets knocked back, but you flag him. Complete trash. They were trying to say, oh, it was a pick play. Yeah, that's cute, unless the defender initiates the contact. Get out my face with that. Yet, the Cowboys rose up, scored the next play. Then, the Cowboys get a touchdown taken away on a hold called on Jason Witten that I just do not understand. Jason Witten's hands were inside. He never closed his fist. There was never any jersey pulled. And yet, here comes the flag. Dallas lost a touchdown on that. I'm fairly certain they finished that one with a field goal that Bailey actually made. Okay? So, again, Cowboys rising up and overcoming in a playoff game in adversity. First of all, the Cowboys overcoming adversity in the playoff game is a statement that hasn't been uttered in over a decade. Let's be clear for 30 seconds. But the fact that the Cowboys were able to do that and then the Lions put out this shankopotamus punt directly afterwards, right, because they had to go back to fourth down.
Yeah, it was a fourth and one, and they tried to get the defense to jump offsides. They couldn't, so they used their timeout.
Right.
And it's one of those things where
this punt was less than 30 yards, yeah, Weasel, is my point.
But, it was 10 yards. It was 10 yards. I don't know how you can punt 10 yards. I can punt the ball 10 yards with both feet tied together with my hands tied behind my back and blindfolded.
Is that a stunt we can get video of? Like, can we make that some sort of a challenge for some sort of a charity? Because that would be awesome.
Yeah, the ball feet tied with the hands tied behind the back and the ball strapped to you. Blindfolded and everything. Yeah, that'd be actually kind of cool. I bet I can still get it further than 10 yards.
Okay. Be careful. Hey, man, I got video staff. We can do this. We can make this happen. No, but all that aside, you come out with this 10-yard punt, then, first of all, on the game-deciding touchdown, Tony Romo had 7 seconds at least to throw that touchdown. The offensive line somehow evolved from the beginning of the game to the end. You say it's they forgot there was a first half, or they remembered that they were still playing, or what any of that is. I think the Lions may have gone home early, one of the two. But.
Yeah, they did. I mean, yeah, I'm not getting anything wrong with the Cowboys because they did take the ball right after that. You know, the 4th and 1.
Right. Then
whatever, down the field or whatever. But, you know, even the announcers, I was listening to the game, that part on the radio with the 20-yard long touchdown pass. They're like, oh, we don't understand how an offensive lineman doesn't hold, but the hold when they have to block for like 10 seconds.
It's called, it's
like,
good
they
form.
Did not hold at all. They're like, that's surprising. You're blocking for 10 whole seconds there when he's just holding the ball.
You know,
for his receiver.
And part of it may have been a contained call to keep Romo from running it because he can do that. But all in all, that just speaks to the talent because this is a good front. Someone had to contain Ndamukong Suh. I'm just saying. And then,
right. And then that's a rookie. That was a rookie offensive lineman there too.
Yeah.
That had part of that task as well. Who is actually was a Pro Bowler this year. He was in talks of
they
an offensive player of the year with the rookie because of that. Yeah. The offensive line for the Cowboys.
True, and they had three. There's three Pro Bowlers on that line. And then my final point is DeMarcus Lawrence, the second-round pick, rookie defensive lineman, forces a fumble. Check that. Recovers a fumble, then gives it right back when he loses it because he forgets that he's fat and should just fall on it. The Lions were given life when it should have been death. And what happens? Same guy comes in, DeMarcus Lawrence, sack fumble recovery, ball game. But you want to blame it on that call, Lions fans. No. There's too much other stuff going on here. The Lions just didn't want it.
It's the thing about the, you know, the pass interference call that was picked up was that the game, you had the Lions up by 3 already. You had them with a 4th and 1. And the thing about that is that so they tried to get the penalty, and what it came down to was that the Cowboys during this game, early on, I think it was in the mid third quarter, 4th and 1 at the Detroit 1, they went for a touchdown, they got it. Now people are saying that the Lions here they are at about the 45, why don't they go for it? You know, get that yard. Bell's been playing decent.
Joey Bell did have a good game,
but them kicking that ball away and it did. A terrible 10 yards. If it was like in the back of the end zone or something like that, it'd be leaning differently. But the Cowboys also in the mid fourth quarter, 4th and 6, they went for it and they converted
that catch.
It.
Yeah. We talked about that.
So stopping those, it takes points off the board. So it's people just say that, the Cowboys wanted it more. So
I agree. I think that's exactly the point I'm making.
Yeah, the Cowboys did want it more. And, I mean, like I said, the Lions only showed up the first half. I mean, even Golden Tate had 89 yards receiving the first half. He ended with 93. So, I mean, what happened to that in the second half? Granted, one was from 51 yards, but where's the other 38 yards, you know, at, with his other 4 catches in the first half?
I don't know, man. But here's what we're certain. As much as I blame the officials on this show, you can't blame this one on the officials. Bottom line. All right. I think we've made that point quite clearly. It's time to move on. Here comes the study hall, where I should only be 1 game back, but I'm a raging idiot. Or at least 2 games back. But I'm a raging idiot that picked the Bengals. Whatever. Damn it. I'll get over it. 1 century. So this brings us to the divisional rounds of the playoffs. Chris is still up 3 games. Damn it. Now, I've come back and tied from this deficit before. But I don't want to have to do that again. Damn it. Sucks. Anyways, leading off, Chris, Ravens, Pats.
Yeah, I'm, you know, the way the Ravens are playing, you know, they got the hot hand, but it is the Patriots. The Patriots have been playing well. The Pats, I am going with the Patriots.
You know, I think this is probably one of the more difficult games to pick that we'll see in this entire offseason. At this point, I even think Pats Broncos is an easier selection. This is tough. History dictates that the Pats are in trouble, but this Pats team has better defense than they've had in a while with, you know, Brandon Browner, Darrelle Revis doing their thing, Vince Wilfork, the world's fastest movable object up front. However, if Flacco continues to do what Flacco can do in the playoffs, this is going to be a hell of a game. Yes, that's right. I just gave Joe Flacco props. Try not to faint. But, damn it, I'm doing it. I got the Ravens against my better judgment.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't have the Ravens. I'm going to pick the Patriots. So, yeah, I think they'll have it. Patriots.
Well, C.J. Mosley will be covering Rob Gronkowski and is a defensive rookie of the... Anyways. the Colts travel to Mile High to play against the Broncos. Chris!
Yeah, this is a rematch of week one of the, you know, of the season. The Colts, you know, just couldn't put it all together at the end. So they had the loss. My usual outcome is if you play against each other during the regular season, I usually pick the loser in the playoffs, which I'm going against my better judgment, so I'm going with the Broncos because of Peyton Manning. I think the Colts have a chance here, but that defense with the Colts, I think Peyton Manning with C.J. Anderson, the Colts defense is going to have a handful there. I'm going with the Broncos.
Hey, the Bengals may not have been able to run the ball with Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, but I'm pretty damn sure that C.J. Anderson's going to get the benefit of that. I don't see the Colts coming out and daring Peyton Manning to throw. That just feels like a bad move. I have the Broncos simply because they have more weapons on both sides. Weasel.
I don't think Peyton Manning hasn't been, you know, too on his game for the past last couple weeks of this season. And
well, I mean, he did thrash the Raiders, but I could see why that doesn't impress you.
Running game kind of did. So,
well, they both did.
I'm going to take the Colts.
Oh, my God!
Yeah.
Weasel, desperate to get past that double-digit mark, you do realize you need to have four games, and there's only four left. So, mathematically, the best you could do is 10.
Oh.
Oh, that sucks. Anyways, Panthers... Seahawks, Chris.
Yeah, you know, this isn't even going to be a close game. Actually, it might be a close game. You never know with this. Both have decent defenses. The Panthers have played defense lately pretty well. But Seahawks at home, I don't think the Panthers' offense can do enough, so I got the Seahawks.
Yeah, this team had trouble getting past. They needed help in the form of turnovers to get past a team with the worst offensive production in history to get here. Yeah, I got the Seahawks. Sorry, Weasel.
Yeah, not going to take the risk this time. I got the Seahawks.
Cowboys, Packers in Lambeau. Chris.
Yeah, Tony Romo sacked six times last week against the Lions front four. Packers front isn't as good, but the Packers offense is better than the Lions. Cowboys have to go up to the cold weather play against the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, you know, he had the calf injury last week. He's a little bit healthier. He was actually in consideration for Offensive Player of the Year because he only had five interceptions. One of them was at home this year. So, I mean, I'm going with the Packers.
Pop quiz. Who is the best performing team at home at home in this season? Weasel.
Could it be the Packers?
Maybe. Chris?
Yeah, Packers.
It's definitely the Packers, who are a perfect 8-0. Pop quiz. Who's the best road team on the air? Weasel.
I guess it's not the Packers.
No. No, it's not.
Could it be the Cowboys?
Maybe. Chris?
Yeah, I go Cowboys.
Yes, indeed, the Cowboys. Look, this is a tough game to pick. It's not as tough as the other one, but both teams have balanced offenses. Both teams have defenses that are good enough. Like, it's kind of like they went to high school late in life. They're GEDs. They're good enough defenses. But that means it comes down to a shootout, which tells me it's Romo versus Rodgers. Look, I get that Romo's good and that Romo is certainly underrated and all that other stuff, but I'm going to pick Rodgers over him every time. I have the pack. Weasel.
I was reading something on the internet, and I think one of the things was that we should, it said something along the lines of we should be thanking the refs because we would be given a third Packers versus Lions game this season. So yeah. So I'm not gonna pick the Packers this game. I'm gonna pick the Cowboys.
It's gonna be
an upset, but this match is up is a lot more better than the Packers versus Lions. So
again, no bias in this decision. Actually, you're right. Both those games are pretty damn ugly. But yeah, overall, I could see why you're picking the Cowboys. It's a tough pick. It's a tough pick. I had trouble with this one. Excuse me. And with the and with the Ravens Pats against my better judgment, I'm picking the Ravens. Good God. Because that worked so well for me last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shut up. Anyways, that'll wrap it up for us this week. Overall, I am Kyle Nash, the student of the game. You can find me on Twitter, at the SOTG. Steven Weasel Hurley. You may also know him as Weasel Weasel.
Yeah, boy.
At Weasel the SOTG on Twitter and coming to us live from the firehouse. No, not a sub shop. He's actually in Sumter County. Chris Rankin doing his thing. Find him on Twitter, at Rankin. The SOTG. Check us out, NGSCSports.com. I will be turning out the Matchup Mania Wednesday night or Thursday. Maybe early if I can get some things done at the day job, but I'm betting against it. Anyways, so with that being said, gentlemen, next week, playoffs. Week after that, Conference Championship Sunday. Week after that, bittersweetness, Super Bowl. Life begins to suck. I better ring this stupid bell before I get sad. Class dismissed.